Good morning. We are here with Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Welcome, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And our guest this week is Dr. Amy Nunn, head of the Rhode Island Public Health Institute at Brown University and an expert on health policy and economics. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with this. To close a big budget gap, Governor Gina Raimondo asked a panel to find nearly $180 million in savings from Medicaid, that's the state's health program for the poor. And we're getting more details now about where those savings will come from over the long term. Let's start with you, Amy Nunn. Can Rhode Island follow through on this plan, you know, without hurting the most vulnerable or, you know, discouraging health care providers from really participating?
Well, I think it's a noble effort to begin paying physicians for helping people get well rather than paying them based on the volume of their services. I think what remains to be seen is whether or not this will actually culminate in cost savings. There have been a couple of studies recently that showed that when states expanded Medicaid, costs actually went up, Oregon being the most recent example. On the other hand, I think that this is a step in the right direction, is what we're doing at the federal level, and I think that it's an issue that we absolutely have to tackle.
Scott, Maureen, what are some of the political obstacles this might face? Let's start with you, Maureen.
Well, obviously, within this state, there are hospitals and nursing homes, for example, and some of the models that they're talking about that are not too happy about not getting the reimbursements that they traditionally get. But my take on that is that this model is emerging in terms of particularly nursing homes and home care. And it's not just here in Rhode Island. It's across the country. And people seem to be accepting the idea that you can give better care, more efficient care, and cheaper, less expensive. And so I think as that moves along and as we see the results of this, it's going to take time. But I think it is, as Amy says, a step in the right direction. And I think it's a model that's operating across the country.
Scott?
Yeah, one of the problems is that Rhode Island has a demographic problem in that we have one of the highest populations of the fragile elderly in the country. And what's happening is folks have Alzheimer's, they have dementia. It's very expensive to care for these people. And a huge problem is going to be, how do we deal with these kinds of illnesses that require institutionalization? And it's very, very difficult problem to solve. And I don't think in the short run we're going to be able to do that.
Another big cost driver we've been hearing about is the high cost of hepatitis C drugs. And I just want to touch on this briefly with you, Amy Nunn. State officials have said that that's part of what's driving the cost of the Medicaid program. But you've said that that may not actually be borne out by the facts.
Well, I think that there's a lot of concern about the costs of treating hepatitis C, but it's actually something that we have to do. This is something that affects 2% of Rhode Islanders. We cannot deny people treatment for a disease that accounts for such a large disease burden. We're going to have to figure out how to do this. It's true that the medications are expensive. It, however, is worth noting that there are now a couple of options and competition is already beginning to drive those prices down. I think there was a lot of nervousness on the part of lawmakers and also the executive about the potential high costs of hepatitis C treatment here in our state, and those concerns are well-founded. But we actually, it's illegal to deny people coverage for treatment, and so we're going to have to figure out how to do that. If you look at the Medicaid caseload estimates that were presented to the legislature in March, we see that only 74 people actually were approved for Hep C treatment. Those numbers are not going to break the bank. I think what will happen is that we'll see a quick uptick in the amount that we spend on this because a lot of patients have been, quote, harbored. That means doctors have been waiting for these wonderful, groundbreaking treatments to come out. Now we need to treat all those people that have been harbored. And then after that, costs will probably start to go down. And what we've seen so far and what the data shows us is that has cost about $7 million of expenditure. That's not a bank-breaking expenditure. Is it expensive? Yes, but we absolutely have to do it. And it's also really important for public health that we treat people so they don't transmit hepatitis C to others.
It's also a big concern, of course, in the criminal justice system with high rates of hepatitis C there. Let's turn our attention to that now. The governor has just put a task force together to try to find ways to reduce the number of repeat offenders. You know, we have really high numbers of Rhode Islanders on probation here in the state. Scott and Maureen, this isn't the first time Rhode Island has tried to overhaul the prison system. Why is Governor Raimondo taking this on, Scotty?
Well, one of the reasons is that prison costs are going up much faster and have for about 20 years than other costs in state government. Historically, go back 15, 20 years and look at the increase in the education budget versus the prison budget. You're going to find the prison budget's gone up a lot more. And now you want to send tax dollars to the ACI or you want to send it to URI?
Maureen?
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, what we're really seeing here is a paradigm shift, not just in Rhode Island, but across the country. When you see individual states and you see groups at the federal level that include the Koch brothers, as well as liberal constituencies, all getting together and talking about reforming the prison system when it comes to sentencing, when it comes to probation, when it comes to, diminishing recidivism by training people and job training. There's a whole new paradigm out there that we're picking up on. And I think the reflection of what we're doing is a reflection of what's going on in the country. Judge Judith Savage has been terrific about being a driving force behind this. And I think this time it's going to have a big and notable effect, and it will reduce the cost. And there's models out there that'll tell us how.
Amy, just briefly, is this a public health issue as well?
Absolutely. Let's zoom out to the big picture for a moment. Why do we have such high rates of incarceration? Nationwide, it's because 68% of people who pass through our prison and jail systems are being incarcerated for some sort of issue related to substance use or abuse. And I think that we're spending public dollars on get tough on crime approaches because that's popular politically for all different kinds of policymakers and politicians. But we're really not getting the outcomes that we want. I think that's because we are trying to address a huge public health crisis related to addiction, substance abuse, and mental health through the criminal justice system, which is absolutely ill-equipped to handle this issue. We need to be treating people with a history of addiction and substance use rather than locking them up. And I want to laud the governor for this bold step into taking a data-driven approach to reducing our probation crisis. We have the third highest probation rate in the nation. It's twice as high as the national average. And a lot of this is being driven by our high rates of substance abuse. So what we really need to do is address this from a health perspective rather than locking people up for substance abuse.
Fantastic. Okay, we're running out of time. So just briefly, Scott, you just got back from Vermont, home of Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders. What's your take?
Well, I think he's giving Hillary Clinton heartburn. I'm sure he's going to be I would be very surprised. It would be improbable for him to be the nominee. But what he's doing is he's talking about real issues that affect people, particularly income inequality. And I think that has given him some traction.
Maureen?
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, it's interesting. He's not attacking Hillary per se. So he's not being competitive in that regard. He's a voice. He's presenting a vision. And I think it adds to the dynamic and the debate.
That's all we have time for today. Thanks, Scott McKay, URI political science professor Maureen Moakley, and our guest Amy Nunn, head of the Rhode Island Public Health Institute at Brown University. I'm Kristen Gourlay, and that's it for this week's Political Roundtable on Rhode Island Public Radio. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.